Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with the author, Adrian Wooldridge, who is also Badgett at The Economist magazine. Adrian Wooldridge, his new book is The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. It's incredibly, presciently up to date, but we are exploring how we got here. The word meritocracy isn't until the middle of the 20th century. However, the search for who is capable of giving good governance, who can we depend upon, who will live out his reign, includes nepotism, patronage, and venality. And I note, rather than look at the negatives, I want to make clear that there were successes. I wrote down three, Adrian. Thomas Cromwell, Adam Smith. Well, that's enough. Those two would be enough for any country. So patronage and nepotism had its advantages. Was it attractive to the kings? Did it make them worry that they were having to choose people outside of their family for leadership?
Sure. It's very important to remember that in pre-modern society, jobs were not things that individuals earned on merit necessarily. They were things that were given away by the ruling classes through a system of patronage. But the ruling classes quite often give jobs to people who are completely useless. But if they'd only given jobs to people who are completely useless, society would have collapsed. So they also give certain jobs to people who are far from useless, who are extremely good. One classic example of that is Henry VIII, who chooses a succession of lowly born men of extraordinary administrative ability to run his country for him while he's out hunting and womanizing and doing all the things that he likes to do. The first one he chooses is Thomas Wolsey, who is the son of a butcher, who's made his way in the church and who does his job extremely well, although ultimately he fails to get a divorce from Rome, and so he has to be punished by being executed. And then followed by Thomas Cromwell, who, as much as anybody, is the architect of the modern British state in its nascent form. And Cromwell, again, comes from a very humble background and is a brilliant administrator. He has an encyclopedic knowledge, photographic memory, an extraordinary ability to command documents and to run the country. And again, does Henry VIII fantastic service. And again, ultimately has to be executed. So, and I think quite often kings like to have administrators who are completely dependent on them, who are poor, who come from a poor background, because they can be dispensed with. They're not a challenge to the king. Everything about them is dependent on the king's majesty.
We now come to the contradiction inside the royal family, the dynasty, the absolute power. In order to maintain, and Adrian identifies this several ways in several countries in Europe, in order to maintain an absolute state, you need talent to maintain absolutism. The talent can be ironic. It can be executed, of course, but there's always more of it. I'm struck, Adrian, that you've identified several revolutions for merit. Is Napoleon considered a meritocrat? I mean, looking backwards, is that what he was? Because he's a very strange man. He's a combination of several versions of pirate.
Well, Napoleon is an extraordinary figure, and I think more biographies have been written about Napoleon than any other human being, the exception of Jesus Christ, who's slightly more than a human being. And I think that he is such an object of fascination because of the contradictions in Napoleon. On the one hand, he is a meritocrat. He talks about the career open to talent. He comes from a place that's very marginal to France. He comes from Corsica and then moves to Paris. And he makes his way, and his way includes basically becoming the emperor almost of the whole of Europe, on the basis of his extraordinary military and strategic genius. Very minor aristocrat and to the very summit of society. However, he's also has many, many of the prejudices of the aristocracy. He has an instinctive feeling that aristocrats are better. He has an instinctive veneration for monarchy, and he has an instinctive worry about giving too much power to ordinary people. So once he has tamed the revolution, he begins to appoint, he invites the old aristocracy back to France to take up some of its old positions. He begins to give crowns to his own relatives. He becomes an emperor. And so what you get, I think, with Napoleon is a strange merger of these two worlds, of aristocratic privilege on the one hand and of meritocratic self-invention on the other hand. And France, in many ways, is continuing to try and reconcile these two principles. If you look at the current president of France, you know, on the one hand, he's an extraordinary meritocrat, who's risen on the basis of his own talents, extraordinary intellectual abilities. On the other hand, he seems to assume almost the persona of a monarch. You know, the president seems to be a monarch. He has all the glory of a monarch as well. So France has always been caught between these two principles. They, as it were, they got rid of their monarchy and then sort of almost had to psychologically reinvent it in the form of the president.
At this point, the search is, what is the filter, modern metaphor, for good decisions when you pick someone to maintain your absolute estate? And just a note before we break, do I say correctly that somewhere in the 17th, 18th century, the power decided that genius was the filter? A brain power, which is what we would say. And did this come from France? Is this the philosophes in action and everybody imitated it? We have about a minute before we break. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Suddenly the French in the 18th century fall in love with genius, and they also begin to think that genius is something more than just something that descends on individuals in a sort of fit given to them by God, and is something which is almost a natural phenomenon that some people have by nature, and that the important job that the state can do is to discover genius and give it its appropriate opportunity.
So what we have here is French philosophers giving a methodology to British governance, to eventually American governance, maybe even Frederick the Great's governance. French philosophers saying brain power is what you want to pay attention to. And we're going to turn to what that brain power means in revolution, the French Revolution. Napoleon is a product of that. The American Revolution, the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century, and the Liberal Revolution, especially about education. The book is The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.